Welcome to Safety Spectrum. I'm your host, Sheila Ide. This program is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference, who's been delivering education and training and up-to-the-date exhibits and demonstrations for over 90 years in Michigan. Our topic today is the aging workforce, the conversation with Joe Galusha, president of Aon Global Risk Consulting. Joe's responsibilities include leading more than 400 US-based risk consultants who focus on mitigation strategies in a variety of areas. Joe led the development of the Aon Casualty Laser, a process that has helped clients identify significant savings. Joe is a frequent speaker and author on workers' compensation cost containment, and recently led the Aon study on the impact of aging in the workplace on workers' compensation claims. He's also a board member and past chair of the Michigan Safety Conference. To introduce the topic, please allow me to read a small portion of a paper Joe and I co-authored on workforce challenges. Before the pandemic disrupted business across America, there was great concern to note the increased rate of fatalities in Michigan. Additionally, workers' compensation data indicated that injuries and illnesses, though less frequent, resulted in more lost days and more restricted duty and costing employers more. There are a number of challenges facing organizations as we return to full business again that may negatively impact the effectiveness of safety programs. These challenges require us to rethink our approach to these programs to include new areas of focus that expand beyond the traditional workplace hazards. Challenges to the effectiveness of traditional safety programs include an environment of increasing employment, which stretches the already depleted supervisory and safety staff, an increase in drug use in the workforce, and an aging workforce. Joe will address the last issue. Welcome, Joe. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
What kind of trends prompted you to do some study on aging in the workplace?
Well, you know, Sheila, we've been looking at this issue for a number of years. Probably started in 2011. Aon, I was part of a small team that created what you just mentioned, the laser assessment. It was basically a data-driven assessment of workers' compensation costs. It's later been expanded to include auto liability and general liability, med-mal, and a few other areas. But the workers' compensation data that we were collecting was done in a little bit different format than we had done before, in that we were looking at individual companies, pulling their data together, and doing something we refer to as claim element benchmarking. And it was a quite successful effort in that we were able to work with clients and really identify what their cost drivers were. And we worked with that data for probably about a year before we started looking at the data from a macro perspective. And when we did that, some really interesting trends came out of the data that were pointing toward the issue of age having a considerable impact on the cost of workers' compensation. And we've later confirmed that not only on the cost, but also had an impact on frequency of some types of injuries and illnesses in the workplace. So that's really what drove me and the team to start really drilling into this issue, Sheila. It was data that came out of that initial laser assessment. And it really, you know, drove us to investigate further into what was driving those outcomes.
Well, why the difference now, Joe? What is different in the workplace today than it was even 20, 30 years ago?
Well, it's interesting. It's a great question because there's quite a few things going on and not even to focus on this issue with the pandemic and, thousands, millions, if you will, of employees who are returning back to work after periods of being idle, which we know are going to cause some issues and the health impacts of COVID, for instance, which seem to be more severe for older folks. But the real difference that we were looking at it prior to the pandemic was that the U.S. workforce has been aging and becoming generally less healthy for the past few decades. For instance, on the aging aspect, the average age of the U.S. workforce is about 42 years old, almost 43. and that's driven by a number of things. One of which is just lower U.S. birth rates have been occurring like they do in any developing nation. Right now, according to the Pew Research Center, fertility is hovering close to 1.8 births per woman in a comparison to what they call replacement fertility, which is about 2.1. So without considering net immigration, each new generation in the U.S. will be smaller than the last.
And that's an interesting point, Joe. Why would fertility be down in an affluent society?
And there, I think there's probably a whole nother podcast that could be done on that.
The health issue, maybe?
But the short answer is that it's natural to every developing society you see the birth rate decrease in parallel with the average income or increasing. It's a very interesting discussion, but one that I'm not an expert on, but know that the impact of it is basically leaving us with fewer people of on the younger side. And the other impact here that I think is just as, and probably even more impactful, Sheila, is that people are working longer. And there was an interesting study or survey done by Gallup that I think the first survey was in 1990, the early 90s. And the question was, how many of you think you'll be working past age 65? And at the time, the response was something like 16%. That same survey was taken in 2013, and the numbers were close to 40%. So the paradigm shift in Americans working, you know, into their later years is driving a lot of this, and much more so than it did in the 70s and 80s.
You're right. It's like maybe the health should be better and people are working longer, or they don't have enough money. So it kind of begs the question, if it's an affluent society, why do we have to work longer? Is it for necessity, or we're just in better health? But I think what you're going to lead up to is that we're not in better health.
Exactly. That's a really good point. I mean, with the aging, we all know that with aging, certain diseases become more prevalent. We call these diseases or issues comorbidities, things that are underlying conditions that, for instance, make an injury worse or a situation that might even contribute to an accident happening because of an underlying condition. But right now, just as an example, Sheila, 30.3 million people have diabetes in the U.S., and that's 9.4% of the U.S. population. And unfortunately, only 23 million of those people have been diagnosed. So that leaves around 7 million that are undiagnosed, or 23% of the population that has diabetes do not know they have it. And as you know, untreated, that's much more significant for an individual.
Did your data indicate at all the ages of people? Were they working age people that are being diagnosed with the diabetes? Or is it just the fact that there's an older workforce?
It is more prevalent among, you know, aging workers, people over 40 years old. The data we were looking at, we kind of honed in on 45 and older, Sheila. And that was an interesting break point in our statistics. And by the way, before I move off of the issue of health, there's another significant contributor to this problem, and that's high blood pressure. We have a tremendous amount. One in three American adults suffer from high blood pressure, and only 54% of those cases are controlled, according to the CDC. So we know that high blood pressure also is a serious complicating factor with respect to workers' compensation injuries. It creates a poor circulation and reduces oxygen flow to cells through the arteries and capillaries, which regenerates and heals the cells. So it's just one of those domino effects of, for instance, especially when you start talking about acute the trauma type issues, it definitely is a contributing factor.
So you've mentioned two modalities so far, diabetes and high blood pressure. Are there more?
Well, there's definitely the issue of obesity, which is contributing to more. There are probably half a dozen issues, including heart disease, right? But the two that are referenced, or the three things that are referenced more often than others, result contributing to the injury picture are obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure. And then I think heart disease is in there as well from an issue of chronic problem that America's faced with, but they all work together, as you know. One thing I want to make real clear in this conversation is that we're talking about the challenges of a workforce that we are inheriting due to the societal trends that we have. But older workers bring job experience, tend to be more reliable, more productive. So it's not that we're trying to dissuade the idea that create a situation where we're anti-aging in the workforce. It's a reality that we're dealing with. So we're trying to understand what can we do with this reality by talking about it and trying to identify how we can help protect those workers with their inherent issues that they have. And there are some things that can be done. But we first have to really study the problem. And as an example, some of the data that we have in our database, the workers' compensation claims are significantly more expensive, and that points to issues driving that, such as days away from work. Due to these comorbidities and other challenges, a worker over 45 is likely to lose 14 days more per lost time injury. They're 30% more likely than their younger workers to have a medical-only claim convert to a time-away claim. So, in other words, a minor injury becoming worse because without treatment. So just a little perspective on that, and I want to make sure that I'm clear when I talk about what we need to do is really understand this issue so that we can mitigate it. Because these workers are our most valuable asset.
Well, you know, health issues aren't unusual in the workplace. I mean, ergonomics has been around for a long time, which essentially is a body health issue. We've been able to move. So I assume that some of the ergonomics that we put in place would help the older workers.
Yeah, that's been one of the real eye-openers, Sheila. The other thing that keep in mind, everything that helps the older worker also helps the younger worker.
Absolutely.
And diabetes and obesity issues are also very prevalent among the youth of the United States and seem to be increasing as a concern. So all of the things we're talking about here, when we start talking about, you know, using a more strategic approach to managing the health of the worker and preventing injuries in the workplace, are going to help everyone, not just those over 45.
I found that to be true when I was working in a power plant industry, and they brought in female boiler operators in training, and some of the things that they would have to fix so they would be able to use it, such as not packing valves quite so tightly and just fixing the problem. And it benefited everyone. Absolutely.
That's a great point. You know, we had, I've got a ton of stories from my early years in my career. I started my career in the safety and health area, really focusing on ergonomics. One of the drivers of the interest in ergonomics during the 80s, which unfortunately, I was there to, that's how long I've been around.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the drivers of the real ergonomic push in the 80s, the stimulus for all that, was an increase in females in the manufacturing jobs. And what we found was the jobs had been designed for the body type of a male, a different average height, different length, average length of reach, all these things, static strength differences. And a lot of our work that we focused on in the early 80s was create a workplace that was adjustable and palatable, if you will, for people of different statures. And I think we're using the same approach now, but we need to do an even better job of it. because we're looking at now a worker whose capacity to do work is changing because of age. So we have actually, in Aon, we've created age filters on our ergonomic assessment to help the person who's doing the assessment understand how an older worker may be affected by the tasks of the job.
I think in our research, in my research when we were writing that paper, is the military seemed to have figured out the ergonomics way before anyone else, such as pilot training and being sure that controls and things were of a different dimension or a different feel so that they could do things without looking at the control panel, and they were set up so that they would fit the person that was trying to fly the plane.
Yeah, it's kind of that blend of the human factors and ergonomics in practice that was definitely very heavily influenced by that work, early work by the military, you're right. And they learned a lot about the human in the studies that they did and what's intuitive and what's not. And obviously creating a workplace that is adapted for the worker versus the worker adapting to the workplace. And that's real key and continues to be a key in ergonomics today with the new workforce challenges we've been talking about.
Well, I think it is a challenge for a lot of safety folks is that they may work for a small company where making massive changes or even small changes may be hard to sell, basically, that they may have to retrain people, they may have to adjust the work site. In the long run, we know that it pays off, but it's hard to get that initial start.
That's a really good point, Sheila, because what you're bringing in now is how do we work with organizations, whether it's internally as a safety professional or externally as a consultant to an organization, to help them understand their investment, the return on their investment. And one of the things that the data work we've been doing is exactly that, getting an understanding of what the costs are to these different types of issues that we're talking about. And so we can help an organization prioritize the limited resources they have to mitigate the workplace issues or improve the conditions to reduce injuries. So I'd love to mention one other analytic tool we've been working with that I look at it as an evolution, Sheila, of the work that we did, that we started in 2011. We've been partnering with our health and benefits teams within Aon, and we've now started looking at the health of the organization and the costs incurred by injuries and illnesses, whether they're occupational or non-occupational, to help an organization understand how the overlap of these conditions affects their total cost. And we're calling this approach integrated analytics intelligence. So the idea is that we can literally study the cost of an organization across any cause of medical treatment or time away from work. We can take information from the biometrics that are collected as folks sign up to benefits to create a blind profile can't be traced back to the individual, but we're looking at mapping all costs to biometric profiles. In other words, the high blood pressure, the costs related to people that have high blood pressure, no matter whether it's work-related or not work-related, the costs related to high glucose levels, whether it's work-related or not work-related, the costs related to people who are categorized as obese, those sorts of biometrics, we map costs into them, and then we can look at how those costs are affecting the organization overall by these different categories, which then allows us, Sheila, to become very prescriptive in what we need to do. For instance, I mentioned earlier the lack of compliance to high blood pressure medication. You know, that half the people who have high blood pressure aren't taking medication. So if we find out in an organization that that's a consistent cost driver, we can then focus on not only the ergonomic improvements that we need to be focused on, but we can focus on the health improvements, helping our colleagues better understand the impact of these issues and increase the compliance. And some organizations like Kaiser Permanente have increased that compliance to high blood pressure medication upwards of 80%. So what a delta, right, in making helping those folks become healthier. And that can be done by really understanding the total impact of those costs.
If I understand, you're actually correlating workers' comp costs or claims with the health costs and finding a similarity between the two. Now, the groups that you mentioned, are they medical or health type organizations?
No, they're actually any kind of organization. They can be a manufacturer or a healthcare organization. And in the Kaiser Permanente example, this is all published work. They were looking at their own population and how they could improve the health and wellness of their employees. And they've done some really, really good work there. I think a real good example of what they call closing care gaps, Sheila, where that they identify the prevalence of disease through biometrics and screening and have all physicians on the lookout to help those colleagues when they interface with them by increasing their compliance to treatment programs.
Now, many companies for years have had health and wellness type of programs, but they're never mandatory in particular, or they might set up a gym. I mean, I think we're talking something way past that sort of thing where it's kind of a casual relationship.
Yeah, and this isn't mandatory. This is more educational. And focused education, you know, trying to help people understand. First, increasing screening, because as we mentioned earlier, there's a large percentage of people with diabetes that don't know they have diabetes. So if we help them understand that and then have available treatment for them, then you're going to have a healthier individual. And these are not new principles, but this is a new way to getting there by leveraging data.
So really what the safety personnel person needs to do is really assess the overall condition of their workforce as well as their experience and, you know, their skill level, but the overall condition.
Obviously easier said than done, but the first step is to reach across the aisle and start having a conversation with your health partner, your health and benefits partner in your organization, and start talking about these things and how you can work together. Because when you pool your intelligence and your resources, you can have better outcomes. And that's really, you know, the simple first step is just starting to have that dialogue. And then you start looking around for what leverage you can pull from a standpoint of data gathering and assessment of that data. And for example, we've actually built a new tool that creates profiles based on a census that's provided by an organization without looking at the costs at all, because we have enough data now, we can predict what the costs will be, Sheila, from the data sets we have. So all we need to know is what the census of the organization looks like, and we can help an organization target some of these areas in a very efficient way, without collecting all the information, because we're basing it on prior studies.
And as we all know, the costs only go up. They don't go down.
They never do. Yeah, they absolutely never do.
For an organization to respond to these trends, we're talking about probably work hardening, ergonomics, re-education, the health screening. That's the part that I find rather interesting. That's not something we normally do.
Not traditional, right?
That's not traditional. So is there anything else that an organization can do to respond to this trend?
Yeah, I look at it in three buckets. The first is the one you just mentioned, is let's create a healthier workforce. Let's work together with our health and benefits folks to help create a healthier workforce. The second bucket, and I mentioned a couple of the ways to do that, leveraging data, understanding what your workforce challenges are. The second bucket is really attacking the workplace. we know enough. If we know what our workforce looks like, and we know our population of 45 and older, and we understand we've got an aging workforce, then we want to take a look at what we're requiring of that workforce, understanding the impact of aging on the biomechanics, and then changing that workforce to support that older worker. So that's the second bucket. The third bucket, interestingly enough, is after the injury occurs, or after the initial incident or realization that someone has a problem. It might not be, quote, an injury. It might be, more of a workplace illness developing, like acute the trauma disorder. Then we need to have a really rigorous response to that. Organizations that are successful, Sheila, are using things like job coaching to return people back to work. They're using ergonomics intervention by on-site physical therapy to look at the job instead of just treating the person, but also go out, the physical therapist going out and looking at the job they're doing, watching them perform the job before they reach the point of, quote, being a work-related injury illness. They're literally just at that point, I have a concern. You know, my forearm's bothering me. Can you look at my job and watch me do my job and see if there's anything you can do to help improve that situation? We need to be more aggressive on that post-reporting and post-injury, if you will, response. And that means, you know, everything from immediate conservative medical treatment to more aggressive return to work and job coaching.
Well, I like the connection. I like the connection with the medical staff and the health people. I know that I go way back to, like you, Joe, and the ideas of setting up the work hardening and duplicating what the job motions are. I mean, that was cutting edge back in the 80s, you know, and it's nice to see that it's still prevalent today, but we need to do even more. And like you say, it's not bashing on older workers. Like they say, they usually are people who have good attendance and they're not distracted by young children sometimes and having to stay home for different issues, but they do tend to stay out longer. And I think one of the things I learned early on is you want to be sure that you're in touch with these folks that are injured, that you're making some kind of connection with them so that they can come back to work as soon as absolutely possible, but safely. So those are things that are, again, hard for the smaller organizations, but it's going to pay them off in the long run, I think.
Absolutely. And the data shows it. The data shows where we are paying attention to these issues. We're having a significant impact on the workplace injuries and the related costs. So it's everybody wins.
And it's not just the manufacturing world. As I remember when computers and laptops became commonplace in the workplace, they thought, well, we can do things quicker, but we can do more. And we had all kinds of issues with those about how to adjust them, how much we were getting carpal tunnel issues, data processing. That opened up a whole realm of ergonomics for us as well. So we learn as we go.
We do. And I think, you know, that continuum that we watched at start and, you know, you can, if you go back even prior to our involvement with, from the manual typewriter, the electrical typewriter, the word processor, the computer, we increased typing speeds threefold. So we started to find out, even in the office environments, that we were identifying the limitations of the human body, especially if it wasn't positioned properly to do the work. And that's that old triangle of force, posture, and repetition.
Absolutely. So hopefully we learned we have to be detectives as safety folks, and that's okay. That's okay with me. So are there any, why do you think this topic is so important now?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're now have another kind of trigger that is going to be seen across the country and around the world, basically, is as organizations ramp back up from being idled by the pandemic. So we know from our past experience with plant shutdowns and restarts that when people jump right back into work after not being at work for a period of time, you do have those issues caused by a lack of work hardening, is one term we've used, where the body just is no longer used to that high rate of activity. And we see injuries and illnesses from that. So what we want to do is, this is kind of a reminder as we all start back up, and hopefully with the success of the vaccines, get back into our full capacity again, and the economy comes back to where it was. As we take that journey, we need to make sure we remind ourselves of the challenges of the worker and what we need to be doing to look out for their best interests.
That's a good point, because if we just leap right back into everything like it, nothing happened in the last year, we're going to have even more injuries and problems, that's for sure. Back in the later podcast, we're going to talk about how to deal with people again. If you've been working from home and Zooming your work life, then trying to get back to work where you're actually engaging with other folks, that may be a whole other lesson that we have to learn. So very good. So do you have any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, I think I just once again, I want to thank the Michigan Safety Conference and you, Sheila, for allowing me to contribute to this. It's been fun to work on it with you. And I have been safe in the safety profession now over 30 years. And the interesting thing about it is, while a lot of things have changed, some things haven't. And the attention to detail, or the need for attention to detail, the need to leverage data, while there's more data than ever available to us, we continue to need to leverage that data to help guide us in our actions, and we'll be much more successful if we do so. And now what I would kind of challenge safety professionals to do, as I mentioned earlier, is just reach across the aisle, get to know the health and benefits folks within your organization, and start working on this challenge together. And I think you'll have more success.
That's great. Provocative program. I think we need to take into account health and condition, as well as safety hazards, workplace hazards. I mean, it's all one big package, and like say, reach across the aisle. So an intriguing process, I think. I really appreciate your time today, Joe. If you'd like to contact us, please email us at MISH, M-I-C-H, Safety Conference, for any questions you might have or follow up for Joe. And we're very happy to thank Joe for his time, and also AON Global for the information that they provided us. And thank you for listening to Safety Spectrum.